to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me. Fuck you and all your expectations. I don't even want your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises all in your conversations. I hate people that feel entitled. Look at me crazy cause I ain't invite you. Oh, you important, you the moral to the story. You endorsing, motherfucker, I don't even like you. Corrupt a man's heart with a gift. That's how you find out who you're dealing with. A small percentage you I'm building with. I want the credit if I'm losing or I'm winning. Oh, my mama, that's the realest shit.
Let's talk about love.
Yo, it's your boy King Reckless in the building, and welcome to another episode of the Reckless Effect Podcast. Man, last week was a trip. Last week there was so much going on, and it's strange to look at the world and see all the things that are going on, and you're kind of just like, what? Can I get a moment? Can I just get a moment to breathe? You know? And but what's great is that last week there was two things in particular that had me really excited, and I was able to put things away, just put things to the side for a minute. And one of those things was Black Panther Wakanda Forever. That dropped last week. And of course, I had to go see it. Of course. There were so many questions that I had. You know, how are they going to tell this story? How are they going to talk about T'Challa's death? How are they going to tell his story of his death? And how are they going to grow each character, and how are they going to develop? How is the plot going to be? Who is the real bad guy in this story? You know, and if you haven't seen it yet, I'm sorry, you gotta go see it. You have to see it. So there are going to be just a little bit of spoilers, but I'm going to really just give my opinion on it. So one of the things that's been going around about the film was the portrayal of T'Challa's death. And there is a TikTok creator out there who goes by the name of Soups, and I like his content, but sometimes I feel like he puts a little bit more bias into his reviews, and it's fine because it is his opinion on things, but he started speaking on how they portrayed his death and how he feels that Marvel was trying to capitalize on Chadwick Boseman's death. And you can tell when someone is speaking on something that they didn't do just that one quick search before they spoke on it. You know what I mean? And in this situation, they used the real life death of Chadwick Boseman and they put it into the film. Not necessarily what he died from, but the manner to which he died, that he had been suffering from this disease and he passed from it. What I found beautiful about that was it was able to get an entire group of people to grieve at the same time and pay tribute to this man and his character and what he did for us. It's kind of strange that a man who played a role played such a bigger role than he even realized in the lives of the African-American community, you know, and it's beautiful. But what I found beautiful even more was to find that the family sat with Ryan Coogler and was like, how do you feel we should tell this story? And it was the wife that signed off on this and said, this is perfect. This is how you should tell this story. And when I found that out, it made it even more beautiful to see Shuri's pain. Because not only did she tap into what the character of Shuri, Letitia Wright, I should say, she was phenomenal. The fact that she was able to capture Shuri's pain of losing her brother and what he means and losing their father not that long beforehand. You know, it was just her harnessing into that. But not only that, it was Letitia, like, absorbing and showcasing the pain that Chadwick Boseman's wife was feeling. Finding out that he had this cancer and trying everything she could to find something that can help him. And she brought all of that pain there. She took all of that and let us see what his wife was going through. That is not only art, but that is raw. That is beautiful. That made me cry in the first few minutes because that was what was going through my brain. This had to be how this woman felt. Searching for an answer, trying to find an answer, trying and to no avail. And he's gone. Her king, her everything, the center of her world, gone. And Letitia Wright just killed that. And it was by far one of the most powerful moments to me. And having Shuri go through that battle of what do I do now? You know, I mean, just almost 10 years ago, it'll be 9 years this December, but when my grandpa passed, it was one of the hardest things in the world because I had just become a father. And he told me he was proud of me and that he loved me. And then the day after Thanksgiving, we find out he's sick. But he's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, December 24th, he's in the hospital. We're spending time with him on Christmas Day. And then he's gone the day after Christmas. And I didn't cry right then. I didn't. I was still in shock. And it was my grandmother sitting right next to me. And she dries her eyes, takes a deep breath, and says, "What do I do now?" And that was the most just painful thing that I've ever heard in my life. And my grandmother is a strong woman, and she's seen it all. My grandmother would tell me stories about, you know, what it was like growing up in the 60s, what it was like to see the civil rights movement. She would tell me about, you know, segregation and all of that. And the way that she would tell it, you can see that it hurt, but she was proud that she went through that because she became stronger. My grandfather became stronger. You know, and I've never seen my grandma cry until the first time ever was when Obama became president. And just seeing that look on her face of pride. And it was just a beautiful thing. And this time seeing my grandmother cry, it was just heartbreaking, you know? And those feelings came up for me. My grandpa was like my dad growing up. He was my dad. I called him dad, you know? Like, my father wasn't around and I never met him. But my grandpa, he would show up when I played football. He showed up when I was dancing and performing. You know, when he would talk to his friends about me, like, yeah, that's my son. He never let me feel like I didn't have a father figure. And then all of a sudden, he's just gone. And what my grandmother said just echoed in my brain, and I kept replaying it over and over because I realized that I'm asking myself that question. I had just became a dad 6 months earlier, so how am I supposed to go forward? And I lost a lot of myself during that time. So seeing Shuri's pain really resonated with me. Feeling what Chadwick Boseman's wife must have been feeling at that time, I understood it and I felt it. I didn't feel like it was cheap. I didn't feel like it was Marvel trying to profit. Excuse me. But I didn't feel like it was Marvel trying to, you know, make money off of the loss of Chadwick by using his real life. It felt more like, hey, what you're feeling, we want you to know that we feel the same. So let's all grieve together. Let's all go through this together. And I think Ryan Coogler is such an important storyteller, such an important person within the Black community. And in cinema, what he was able to accomplish with this film in that moment was incredible. And I, for one, want to say thank you for that. That was beautiful. And seeing that opening scene, I had tears, and I didn't stop crying until after the funeral. That was such a beautiful, beautiful movie. And I didn't want to compare it to the first one. I wanted it to be on its own. Because if we're looking at a story, and we're looking at the story's progression, we have to take it from this point of where the story begins going forward. We can't look at it as, well, let's look at the last film and what that was able to do and how I was feeling about that back then and do that here. No, you can't do that because it's unfair to the new, what's going on and what's going forward. You know, it's kind of weird when people do that. And people can say that what I'm about to say is apples and oranges, and that's two completely different things, but those are the same fruits. Anyway, it's like you have a kid, and that experience was amazing the first time around, but then you have a second one, and you're like, this one's not as good. Like, it's a sequel, you know, it's a continuation. So you look at it from that point and say, what makes this different? What makes this special? Because it's not going to make me feel how this first one felt. Because that first one was new. It was something special. It was something great. This one is still special. And it has a different story. It has a different arc. These characters have evolved. Is there development within these characters? How are people reacting to the things of the past? You know, this is something special. This is something beautiful, you know. And really looking at this, you know, there was also comments of like, oh, but she's so small. She shouldn't be able to do this. And it's like, yo, she's a warrior too. You know, this family trained in all aspects, you know. And it just makes sense that she's able to do things, but she does them differently. And then it hit me, oh, wow, she still is young because she blipped for 5 years. So, yeah, that makes sense. Just the whole story was incredible. Okoye, still one of my favorites. Denai is such, like, a badass. I loved her when I saw her on The Walking Dead, and her in these films, she's a badass, just a savage, and I love her. The one cameo that I wanted to happen, and it was really just one. I only wanted one. It happened, and it didn't happen the way that I thought it was going to happen, but it made it so much better when it did happen because it was not what I expected, even though I was hoping for it. The story was perfect, and the little side cuts and scenes, it only showed me what's going to happen or helped me understand what's going to happen when the Thunderbolts movie comes out. And it's perfect. Now let's get into two characters on this movie. Number one, let's look at Queen Ramonda. Angela Bassett, this queen, this is top six performances for me. She is amazing, but she's always been amazing. I mean, Waiting to Exhale, What's Love Got to Do with It, How Stella Got a Groove Back, all three of those films should have been enough to give her that Oscar back then. But this performance, I think, should get her that nod. She deserves it. She really deserves it. She made you feel something. She made you, like, really stand up and fight with her. You mourned in a way that she mourned, you know, and it made it so much more powerful. this was one of my top performances from Angela Bassett. Still, number one will always be What's Love Got to Do with It. I mean, she killed it as Tina Turner. And all you people out there who have never seen What's Love Got to Do with It, if you don't come away watching that movie, falling in love with one Angela Bassett and two Lawrence Fishburne, something is wrong with you. You have no love for movies. You have no love for good acting and art, because that was incredible. That was incredible. It's always hard to like watch someone do a biopic and you know so much about that person already that you just want them to do it justice. And it's rare that you see somebody just knock it out of the park. And she did that. Lawrence Fishburne did that in What's Love Got to Do with It. So you have to watch that movie. Waiting to Exhale has one of the most iconic scenes on the planet. And she was just... Mwah. But this was amazing. This was great. And I am so happy that I got to sit in that theater and watch Wakanda Forever. She was phenomenal. Like I said, Letitia Wright, she was also incredible. She definitely deserves a nod. She really put her foot in it. And that was beautiful work. That woman is an artist, and I can't wait to see the art that she's going to make going forward, not just in Marvel, but in everything that she touches. But let's talk about Namor. Oh, my. Soon as he stepped out of the water and made his appearance, I got chills. And it wasn't like anything like spectacular or crazy. It wasn't anything that really just made you like, holy shit. It was his presence. His presence. The way he looked at you. The way he spoke. The way he said his name. And my enemies call me Namor. Holy shit, it was cold. There was just something there. That's old pain. And then when you watch the story of his people and where he came from and why he feels this way, if you are black and brown indigenous, you felt that and you understood. It was brilliant. That man is going to just wow. And his character was such a badass. Knowing that he's the first mutant, you know, and knowing the history of Namor and the beef between, you know, his people and the Wakandans, and just knowing like that beef in the comics, having them change that story just a little bit to make it fit, having them be, you know, Aztec heritage was beautiful. Oh my God. Everything was incredible. And it was so powerful to see. It was beautiful to see two cultures who had been in hiding for so long, who just want to be left alone and keep what they have for themselves, because they know that if it got out, what the world would do with this. And they're protecting their people as well as the world. And it was beautiful to see that. And it was even greater to see that these two proud cultures, not just wanting to protect themselves from the outside world, but was willing to die for what they believed in and trying to hold tight to what's sacred and theirs. And that battle, and that's why I opened it with who was the real like villain in this film. And that villain was the Americans, and the French, the colonizers, the people who want to take from everyone so they can be the powers that be. Because in this, you can tell that the Americans are afraid. But what are they afraid of? Are they afraid that these people will realize that we're strong that we're better than you, that we have all that we need and we can attack all of you and take over? Yes. But it never dawns on them. Yo, they've been having this technology for millennia. Why haven't they come for us? Why haven't they showed us that? Maybe because they don't need to. Maybe because they don't want it. They want their way of life, and that is it. And that is from both sides. And when you see the struggle and it's beautiful. The conversation between Namor and Shuri was gorgeous, and it was beautiful. But seeing the costume design, seeing Talokan and how that looked, it was just perfection. It was perfection. I loved it. The fight sequences were dope. One of the coolest parts of the film was when everything slowed down and they're just talking and really listening to what people are saying, really listening to what Namor is saying and why he feels like this is necessary and why he felt that he needed to kill Riri. And I honestly don't think that he wanted to, because if he did, he would have done it. I think it was more of like, we have a vested interest. You and I, the Wakandans, and us, we all have something sacred that we need to protect. And we can't let it come down to the Americans fighting us. Because if they find us, we will kill them. And I think if the world comes for us, we need to band together and show them that we are nothing to fuck with. And that, whew. That's some real shit. That's some beautiful shit. And it was weird because I was walking out of the theater and somebody was talking about it and they got to that part and then they said, you know, if black and brown people and indigenous and the Asian Americans come together and we realize and we bring in the poor, we outnumber the very people that we're supposed to govern. I think that's why they try to separate us and put us into classes. Because if they put us into classes, no matter the race, we will always feel like we're different from someone else. We're always going to feel like we need to beef with each other when the real issue is the government. And I looked and I was like, "Ooh, shit, she got that. It's deep." But honestly, I give that movie 10 out of 10. It had everything that I wanted and everything that I needed. The sequences were amazing. If I just took it as like a standalone film and not as part of a sequel, it was perfect storytelling. It had character development. It had an internal and external like fight with the protagonist. It was incredible. It was such a good film. And it also showed how these characters are going to be important for the bigger story. This was a perfect way to close out phase 4. And now we wait until February for the beginning with Ant-Man and Quantumania. That's going to be a very interesting film. And I have a prediction. I think Scott Lang's going to die. I really do. And what's crazy is that I noticed something. I noticed that in all the films in Phase 4 were all about passing the mantle. You know, we saw it with Captain America, you know, Steve Rogers giving the shield, you know, over. And him trying to deal with, you know, I feel like I don't deserve this. But he was actually the right person to receive it. We saw it with Hawkeye, him passing the mantle on to I forgot her name, the girl in that story. You know, Iron Man passing on to Spider-Man and so on and so forth. Like, we see these things that are being passed on. Natasha and Yelena, we're seeing this because it's not just about like, oh, I can't carry this role in this character anymore. No, it is the end goal is to get to these young Avengers that are going to take up the mantle of what's happening later, what needs to be done. And that's such a, this is brilliant. This is such brilliant, like, astounding. I love it. Ryan Coogler, thank you. Disney, Kevin Feige, Chadwick Boseman's family, his wife, thank you, because this was perfect. This was exactly what I needed. This is exactly what we all needed. To grieve and then to come out the other side and get to acceptance and to be okay. That's beautiful. Such a good film. Now, I think it's time for me to get into the second thing. And this, it speaks for itself. Ladies and gentlemen, this is legit from Nas.
Is there a heart? Is there a heart in the house tonight?
Brave hearts.
Stand up. Let me know that you understand. Is there a heart?
Is there a heart in the house?
Is there a heart in the house? You got to have love. You got to have love in your heart.
Yeah. My beginnings was intense. Who'd have thought I'd go legit?
For sure.
Yeah. We coming blacker than Black Panther 2. Nobody this thorough, that's the truth. Never go against the family, that's something you don't do. Don't get Eddie Kane trying to sing your way back in the group, nah. Stars in the ceiling, got sun in the building, rep that 718. It's hard to depart from that feeling, careful selling weight. The DA be watching who dealing, get yourself straight before they find that paraphernalia. For those who claim 100 million on taxes, beautiful actresses, street dudes who turn activists, who used to move packages. No nine, still here to remove the wall that I'm back against. Legitimize all your hustles before the gavel hit.
It takes more than love.
It takes waking up early to face the moment, debating should I save it or blow it. I mean, it's only some paper. None of my neighbors too nosy. The Joneses own it. Some acres to be the greatest is lonely, but it chose me. I take it, whatever the case may be. I'm out of space, OD. NASA without the A at the end. Take off on three. What's the cost of a CD? With 1500 plays is one sale. What's that? The 1500 P's on one scale. For a starving artist trying to sneak out and reroute. Originality I seek out. Let's clean house to black homeowners. Check it out. To black homeowners, take over and throw the lease out. This, that, movie reel, the Jordan Peele of this thing. Low key, bullshit, pulling strings behind the scenes. All my soul is for my kids and the cold shit I done did. All them O's I tried to flip, who'd have thought I'd go legit? Yeah. And the cold shit I done did. Pretty girls who let me hit, who'd have thought I'd go legit? Yeah. That you did, all them O's you tried to flip, who'd have thought you'd go legit? Grown man business, COVID closed jail visits, stove still lit, many still on the scales with it, system failed my niggas, in the trial hearing no bail, eyewitness showed up and snitches, I read Jesus diary and ran to tell the streets, no this ain't no hype, we in the belly of the beast, all they said was I would be a felon, be deceased, instead I'm in Margiela and Loewe with the crease, the consummate, kill them all, call the bomb squad and why for this? Got off the block for this. Yeah. All my soul is for the kids and the cool shit that I did. Pretty girls who let me hit, it's only right I went legit.
Too legit.
And the cool shit I done did. All them O's I tried to flip, who'd have thought I'd go legit? Yeah.
I do it for y'all.
And the cool shit that you did. All them O's you tried to flip, who'd have thought you'd go legit?
Do it for y'all.
Yeah. We was just chilling on the sofa. No job, no school. Ghetto babies. Small time to big time, you could do it too. Go legit. Yeah, believe in yourself. Live a life you deserve. That's how we do. I ain't forget the roaches and mice. I ain't forget all that.
Yo, come on. Come on. Ladies and gentlemen, Nas dropped his epic conclusion to his King Disease series. The series that brought him his first Grammy. This was King's Disease 3. Just, it was, oh my God. Nas and Hit-Boy come back for another one. Hit-Boy produced and executive produced this along with Nas, and it shows that this dynamic duo is tops in the industry right now. That joint had the sample from one of the great black films, The Five Heartbeats. Eddie Kane, when the group was getting booed off the stage, and this man is blowing. What? Oh my God. That scene, that moment was so incredible to watch. It was so just a great way to really get you believing in this group and what they can do, what they are here to do, what they were made to do. And that's what makes, you know, this album just even better. That makes that song better. Because you get that, you get into that zone, you get into that, yes, you know what? I don't think y'all hear me. I don't think y'all hear me at all. Because when I say that scene, black people know. But come on. Let's just give credit. Robert Townsend, you genius. Let's just feel me on this. The soul. I mean, I know that none of them were actually singing when this genius came out, but at the same time, the look on his face made you believe that this man is singing. He's singing. Let me give you some more.
Love, and I've learned that it don't take much to break a heart.
You feeling that right now, ain't you? You feeling that right now, ain't you?
And I've learned.
I mean, come on. Come on. Shout out to Robert Townsend. That is such a... Oh, man. So, for Hit-Boy to get in his bag and pull this out and say, hey, Nas, you know, we just got to throw it on him one time. Like, come on, son. Come on, son. Come on, son. That was... Woo! I was in the car, and after Ghetto Reporter finished, you know, it's always good when I hear, you know, a rapper, especially a legend like Nas, you know, pull in a little bit of that truth and bring in some of that, and you hear Richard Pryor's voice, you know, when you're looking around for justice, and that's what you see, just us. It's such, oh man. And the album just got progressively better, you know. And the thing that I loved the most about this was that he had no features. It was just him, the mic, a booth, beats. That's it. It gave me Illmatic vibes. It gave me Hip Hop Is Dead vibes. It gave me This Is Fucking Hip Hop. This was such an incredible, just, it's, even though the Grammy nominations are already out, this will be a Grammy nominated album by next year. It definitely will be. It was something special. Nas being as old as he is at, 49, I want to say? 49, yeah. 49 years old. And he just, you know, oh, here, I got some more shit for you. Like, what the fuck? When he dropped Magic last year, I was like, oh, see, son, now you're just fucking with people. And then this incredible piece of work. Thun was crazy. When he mentioned Jay-Z, No Beef or Rivals, they playing. Ether on title. Brothers can do anything when they decide to. In a Range Rover, dissecting bars from Takeover. Sometimes I text Hova like, nigga, this ain't over. Laughing. Come on, son. That is development of self. That is looking back on a situation and saying, you know what? You know, that was sport. That was ill, but I think I got some more bars for you. Hold on, Hove. I got you. I got some more for you. And I know Hove heard that and was like, oh, if you think you got some, I got some for you too. Like, that's sport. That's beautiful. That's what's missing in hip hop. Not all this, like, fuck this nigga, fuck that. You know, some beef is cool to miss, but, like, being able to look at your opponent and have respect for him and want to still give your best bars at him because it's sport, because I know who I am in this game. You know what I mean? Like, that's fucking dope. First time on this album, it's reflecting on his 30-year music career, and he imagines what it's like for his fans to first discover him and first discover those opening bars from Illmatic, you know? Your big brother put you on like surprise. Here my hood describes so vivid. You could see it, but closing your eyes. That's... The man is just coming from where he began to now. This is just amazing to see. And this album, no question, is probably his best piece of work since Hip Hop Is Dead. Actually, all three, these three albums are his best pieces of work since Hip Hop Is Dead. And I mean that. I mean, I love Stillmatic. I thought it was such an important piece of music. Ether, One Mic, you know, Get Yourself a Gun, like classics. But these three pieces of work, it's just phenomenal. And I've always had Nas in my top five. Actually, if you listen to my earlier shows from years ago, my number one album was Illmatic over Big, Ready to Die. You know, I hold Nas in such high regard, and my top five MCs, Nas was always number five. Always number five. I think I might put him in my top two. You know, I just might. And no, I'm not going to give you my top five. I'm not going to give you my top 10 just yet. I'm probably going to do a top 50. And I'm positive my list will shock you. And I'm going to get some real shit over it. I mean, I already got shit over saying Taylor Swift is a better overall artist than Beyonce. And I stand by that. I will stand by it. But there hasn't been that much work that's been put out in the last year that is going to top this album. In hip hop specifically. But speaking of hip hop, congratulations are in order to Pusha T. His album was nominated for Best Rap Album, and it's so deserved. So was Kendrick Lamar, so deserved. But fans are up in arms about Nicki not being nominated and say, oh, she snubbed and blah, blah, blah. Listen, I want you to hear me. I want you to feel me. And I'm standing by this. Even though this is just my opinion, I'm standing by this. Nicki Minaj is not as great as you guys think she is. I'm sorry, she's not. The last three albums, three, were trash. I'm sorry. Somebody, please tell me analytically why Nicki Minaj should be in conversation as one of the best female rappers. Please. I need to know. I really do. Because if we're looking at her, body of work, right? We're looking at, what are we looking at? We're looking at Queen. We're looking at Pink Friday, Pink Prip, Beam Me Up, Scotty. We're looking at all of this, and you really believe in your heart of hearts that she's one of the, I'm sorry, Beam Me Up, Scotty was boring as fuck, boring. It was 23 songs of This Ain't It. Queen, 20 songs of What the Fuck Did You Just Put Out. Rich Sex, terrible. Barbie Dreams was okay. Bed, bleh. Thought I Knew You, bleh. Chun Sway, I'm not feeling it. Run and Hide, Chun Li, LLC, Nip Tuck, no. This wasn't it. This was not it. And then when she put the song Fifi with 6ix9ine on there, 6ix9ine's joint, and she put it on the album, that only boosted up her sales of the album, because if you look at the overall numbers of this, that one song, Fifi, was streamed 718 million times, right? In comparison, the next top song was Chun-Li, 313 million. I mean, and it just goes down from there. That album was trash. Like, there was nine good ones, 9 out of 20, though. That's still an F. And on Beat Me Up Scotty, there was like 7 of them that play again. But 7 out of 20, 23, I'm sorry, that's an F. That's an F. And then you want to, oh, well, look what she did with that joint, Freaky, Super Freaky Girl. Okay. So she made a hot song. That doesn't fucking mean anything. The album's trash. She's just not, she's not good. The beat selection was cool. Her delivery, I liked Nicki when she was still underground searching for a deal because she was proving that she was one of the best females out. But, as soon as she got on, it was just like, you know, this bubblegum shit and her being pretty and sexy, it's that sold. I'm sorry. I just can't get behind it. And what the hell would she be nominated for? Just for the single? Best rap single? Okay. No. Take that shit to Billboard. Where it doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. I can't. I can't. There's so many other, I think Snow the Product is a better rapper than Nicki Minaj. And I know somebody's going to come at me for this. I really don't care. But there are so many better female MCs. I'm sorry. It's true. Gifted Gab is a better MC than her. Jean Grey is all time one of the best female MCs. That woman is so good. She decided to go into comedy because she had nothing to accomplish because nobody could step to her. Fucking nobody. And I dare any female MC to come out and be like, you know what? I got some words for it. No. Charlie Baltimore is a better MC than Nicki Minaj, and I will stand on that. I will stand on it. I'm standing firm. I already feel some hate coming, and that's fine, but I'm just speaking my truth. This is my opinion. You know, I'm not free of the consequences that come from that opinion, but it is my opinion nonetheless. Sorry. And there was a lot of stuff that I was going to get into, but I figure I can wait and put that on another episode because there was some wild shit that was going on. But there's one thing that I want to address that I didn't do last week. And with so much going on, I cannot believe that this I didn't address this. Takeoff died. And while we're still figuring out a lot of things that went down that day, the one thing that I can say is that it is very sad to see him go so soon. Young man, still in the prime of his life, just cut down over ignorance. And again, we don't know exactly what went down. We have videos, we have eyewitness statements, we have this, we have that. But at the end of the day, was anything that happened worth him losing his life? The answer is no, and it will always be no. He was too young to go. And it's sad to see violence between our brothers go down like that. It's sad to see a young life being cut short over arguments and disagreements. It's sad to see that. And it's strange to see how many people are quick to pull a gun up and not want to take an ass whooping. You know what I mean? It's just sad. Like, I know I've known some people who've been to prison, and talking to them about the mindset and this mentality, and I've seen people, you know, play dice, you know, dominoes, whatever, and they just talking all this shit, and then it's quick to, I'm gonna kill you. Well, I'll be right back. It's so sad to see. And I think a bigger conversation needs to be had. I think a few weeks ago I mentioned something about black on black crime and how, like, we need to work that out. And then I was educated on that and realized that, yes, it's the circumstances and proximity. So, of course, there's going to be black on black crime when we are only around each other because of situations that led us to being here. I get that. But the situations that led Jewish people to be in those communities and where they are led them to prosper and to become something more. Italians, Asians, they all prospered and became something more of themselves. Sure, we do see, you know, the ghetto. We still see them, you know, beefing and all this stuff. We do still see poor in those communities. Don't get me wrong, but they are a community first. That's why the Asian dollar is so strong. That's why the Jewish dollar is so strong. That's why ours is not. There's this division and this separation within these communities, and we don't even recognize that we're continuing to be in these circumstances and not actively trying to find the right way out. But what is the right way? I don't have all the answers. I just have a lot of questions. And like I said, I just want to say, I want to send my love and condolences to Takeoff and his family. It's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. Yeah, man, it's not much else to say, but I want to end this show on, I want to end this with just this thought of, even though the ones we lost tragically, even though they're gone, they're not really gone. They will live with us forever through song, through memories, through moments. They will live forever. And that's exactly what I'm going to close this episode out with. I will be back soon. But until then, enjoy this classic joint by one of my favorite MCs of all time, Common. This is Forever Begins.
Victory won. In a world of Hennessy and guns, too young for the marches, but I remember these drums. The stark reality of wars and battles we fought for ours, caught in ghetto tragedy. I talked to my aunt named Maddie Lee and recognized the importance of family. Hand me a joint, good music and room to breathe. Those that doubt calm will soon believe. Can't judge the weed, my lady had one. I'm more like a fool for soul and passion. The price of gas rises, street life is pumping, fast lives is. I watch crash and realize that we all survivors. No religion or race could ever describe us. My guys do dirt, but never really talk about it. Forever begins just because I thought about it. in the roll call for heaven go come, forever go come. It's a cold world, not and never go numb. Look fear in the eye, say I'm never go run. Sooner than later, I know the cheddar go come. For now, write the world letters to better the young on tree by jury. Together we hung, now we let our chains hang and gang bang to maintain. Afghanistan going through the same thing. It trickles down at each other, we ain't pain. I shoot for stars, peace and exclusive cars. Through the ride, I learn to earn hard. Watch gangsters turn God in the midst of war. No matter how much I elevate, I kiss the floor. It was in the wind when she said Dilla was gone. That's when I knew we lived forever through song.